Welcome along to Season 3, Episode 22 of LOI Weekly with Johnny Ward and Daniel McDonald ahead of the European Games this week, two of which are live on Air Sport, and we are in association with Air Sport and Independent.ie. Special show today, looking ahead to Europe. We've Mark Roster in studio. He'll reflect on some of his European memories and what he's up to nowadays. We have Declan Carey later on. He's the Cork City chairman, just to discuss, I guess, their financial situation and also to discuss the big European game that's impending in Turner's Cross. And we have a Latvian journalist on today, Edmund Novikis, Dan, is it? Edmund Novikis?
Sure. I'm not sure that either of us are top class in terms of our command.
We'll ask Edmund.
We'll ask him to clarify.
Edmund Novikis.
he knows stuff about Riga FC.
Yeah. Okay,
so that's the context of it here.
The biggest game of them all, obviously, Riga against Dundalk on Wednesday, and the return leg will be live on Air Sport as well. Hopefully Dundalk's still very much in with the shout in a week's time. Welcome along to Mark Roster.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I should also mention we do have a winner from the 100th episode review winner. Eric O'Brien, the boy O'Brien's review, won two tickets to the Ireland-Switzerland game in the Airbox, and very grateful for that. At LOI Weekly on Twitter, so you can see all the...
Yeah, we got some nice reviews, it must be said.
Yeah.
Common themes that kept coming up was Harry Kenny getting changed in the house down
that
the road
blinder,
before the pod. Several references to Johnny Dunleavy and,
his love life.
Johnny, and that was the highlight of the show. You didn't even know Johnny Dunleavy before the podcast started. And look at you now.
Mm.
You know, you're practically...
We owned horses together and all.
Yeah, inseparable. And there was a couple of references to your stake in the nightclub in Killarney again, which...
Yeah.
I never got told that story, really.
Good, I don't know, Mark. Do you think this is... I don't really think this is that weird, but a lot of people do. We had a horse together. He won in Killarney. We went to this lovely restaurant. But either
hang on. Let me tell the story, right?
Well, we went to
You go to a lovely... I'm sorry to people who regular listeners have heard the story before, right? So you go to... You have a lovely meal. You've had a fantastic day. One of the best days of your life, almost. And we go for a nice meal. But of course, you go out with Johnny Ward for a meal. He spends most of his time out on the phone ringing other people, ringing people of influence. He comes back in, starts dropping names, whatever. You have a couple of drinks. You go out to the nightclub, because hadn't finished his dinner. And eventually you have a couple of drinks. You go into the nightclub and you're walking down the nightclub. You look, where's Johnny gone? And you look around and he's at the cloakroom. I'm thinking, but Johnny wasn't wearing a jacket all evening. And he's taking a steak in one of these styrofoam containers and handing it over the counter and getting one of the raffle tickets back as well. My whole logic of it, but I also thought about in hindsight, like, why did they actually give you a ticket? Like, how many steaks did they get in on the evening? You're like number four, number five. Like, does someone bring home the wrong one and go, I took a minute steak
have
home.
You,
I'll have to drop it back. I'm going to fill it tomorrow.
Have you had in the butcher's grill in Ranelagh?
I saw you put up a picture of it on Instagram last night. I just thought it was unusual to bring a steak as a nightclub cloakroom accessory.
It was an expensive enough steak, I think, and I wasn't nearly finished it. So last night I was having...
But hang on, but then also...
Last night I was having a steak
the following
in
day,
Ranelagh,
the
right,
following day I get in the train and Johnny is still clutching this steak. He puts it above the overhead compartment.
Yeah, and I had it that night and it was lovely. Like
2 days later.
So last night in the butcher's grill, I actually asked the waitress, I was like, what happens this food like when it's not eaten and it's just completely wasted? I'm not a fan of wasting food, especially good steak. So I thought, am I going to just waste a steak or will I have a lovely meal the day after?
Bring it out.
I don't find it that weird.
Bring it out and then put it on a train compartment. I just don't know if that's good for the quality of...
How are you getting on, Mark?
I don't know what to comment on that. I don't.
But I mean, but
if he was bringing it home for a dog, I would have said fair enough. But
there was a great Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where they had a big debate about the doggy bag. But anyway, we can't get into that. I was reading today in the paper, Dublin Airport had their busiest June on record, I think.
Probably, yeah.
That's your day job. You're out in the airport.
I have a company up there. Me and my business partner set it up about 2 years ago. I've been there for about 7 years. So I supply staff for whiskey and gin companies, promoters or brand ambassadors. So
how did you get into it? Because I mean, you are the classic guest almost that we have on this show. You went to England very young as a professional footballer. I'm guessing you left school to go over to England?
I left when I was just gone 16.
Gone 16.
I would have been going into my leaving cert year. So I would have been doing my leaving cert just gone 17.
So how have you got into the business world? Because you came home, I mean, your story's been told before, I know, but you had injury, then you came back to the game and you played full time then.
Yeah.
So what happened in terms of getting into this?
I suppose when the collapse of Bohemians happened, training, even though training never changed, it just moved to the evening time. I just more or less had nothing to do during the day, so I was just twiddling my thumbs. My ex-girlfriend's mom was working in the airport, said, do you want to come in and do a couple of days or whatever? And I just went, yeah, and it kind of went from there. And I suppose the alcohol industry is one of the fastest growing in the world. It interests me hugely, I suppose whiskey more so than anything, but yeah, how they're all different and everything like that. So yeah, so I kind of just went into that. And then October 2 years ago, we set up the company, and we've got some of the biggest accounts going now at the minute, so everything's going
great.
Well.
So how did you adapt to just the different workplace, the different workplace environment?
It was weird initially, because you go from, I suppose, being full-time at Bowes, and, you know, I'd be in there for 9 o'clock down for training. We didn't start till 10:30, but you could be finished at 11:45, you know, and you're there going and you've nothing to do for the rest of the day. So you go to a shopping centre and probably drink coffee and read the newspaper or something like that, you know. So it was weird to actually start the day at 8 a.m. You're going 8 to 4 and then ultimately go to training after that. Yeah. It was a lot more taxing on the body, I suppose.
Is it a different social skills, though, as well? Like, you know, you suddenly you're into that environment. I think you said outside that you just have to chat shy to people, basically.
you
seem to think that would be fine.
Yeah, it's it is one of them. It's a very social atmosphere, and you're going to deal with people that you'll never see again. So, yeah, it can be as good or as bad as you want to make it, literally. Mm. But I find it very enjoyable. You know, people interest me a lot. I suppose different cultures and stuff like that. So it's I find it very good. Mm. Some other people struggle with it a little bit, but yeah. I'm not a millennial, so I don't need to send WhatsApps to people, really, you know. So I know I like talking to people, so it's good from that point of view.
Yeah.
And Irish whiskey as well, it just seems to be absolutely booming. It's like, is it the growth of it, I suppose, well before you got involved.
Yeah, it's, I suppose, the fastest growing spirit in the world. Mm. Look it up until, I suppose, Prohibition and stuff like this. It was the best-selling whiskey in the world. So, you know, Dublin now has 4 operational distilleries in the city centre of Dublin. They have, I think, 25 distilleries around the country total. But at one stage, there was anywhere up to 1,500 to 2,000 licensed and unlicensed distilleries before World War One.
Wow.
Prohibition, all that. There's like Dublin is laced with history on the likes of them. So I suppose when Teeling opened in 2015, it was the first operational distillery since Powers closed in the 70s. So
wow.
Yeah, it's big business. So if you have a couple of $100 million, it's probably a good business to get into.
Yeah, it sounds like a time. I mean, you sound like you're passionate in it, so it's obviously, but it must be time consuming as well.
It can
have
be.
Your own business. All of a sudden, it's on you. It's on your shoulders.
It
you
is,
know.
Yeah. No, but I enjoy it. I really do. I suppose, like everybody, I suppose if you're a company owner, it's finding the right staff that'll do the brand's justice and stuff like that. So, you're in. I suppose you're in the era now where it's like people will ask you questions and they'll literally Google it in front of you to see if you're, I suppose, talking tripe. So it's, you know, you need to be on point with all the info you give. And look at everybody, I suppose, is into the whole gin fad at the minute. And
fad.
Hugely. You know, they want these gins in a big bubble glass laced with tonic and a different type of fruit. And yeah, it's
The boom is back, you know.
Juniper berries and all that stuff. Would you advise players to make sure they do all this stuff if they're professional? Because I don't know if... I'm kind of thinking, how many hours, like, when you're talking about sitting in a cafe reading the paper, that's kind of my life for a lot of the week. But then it gets busier maybe. But, like, to do that every day when you have hours and hours filled, you can see why footballers almost become a little bit stupid because they've just nothing to be doing apart from being around the same people.
And social media. You know, it's, like when I played in England at the time, I can remember one of the lads I played with, his brother played semi-professional, or he was a professional cricket player, his half-brother, and they'd play for 8 months of the year. But the cricket board would have jobs sorted for them for the 4 months that they weren't earning. And I think that'd be huge, because how many players come the end of the season literally just go on the scratcher for till pre-season starts? I'd be a huge fan of, in any way, like the biggest directive I'd have if the FAI do jump on board and make the league as good as it can, is to try and get something to integrate them into society for when they finish.
Colleges as well are.
Absolutely. Whether they want to re-educate themselves or whether they're looking for jobs in specific fields. You know, like, I suppose if you look at the lads like, say, Robbie Benson, who went to UCD, so they've got degrees and masters and all this kind of thing. So
the two lads moving from Sligo to UCD as well.
Absolutely. But we've had guests on before. I mean, I think it was Paul Corey. I'm trying to think, Shane Supple, and we've spoken about the transition. And actually, like, footballers, as much as they may, in some cases, might have left school early and they mightn't have the educational background, a lot of people still look at them as good employees because there's a good work ethic. There's a discipline. You're like, you're not, you can't really be 10 minutes late for football training. Like, you can be almost, like, people maybe in a more regular job will be, running a bit late in traffic.
Yeah.
If that happens in a football environment, you get a reputation almost as a bad egg straight away. So there's a certain discipline that can transition to other sort of workplaces.
Hugely. I think it's up to the players to realise as well, I suppose, you know, not thinking to themselves that if you're, you know, 17 or 18 and you play in the league, are you going to play professional? You know, you may, if you're lucky, play till you're in your early 30s or whatever like this, but, you know, I suppose the long and short of it is maybe 5% of these players in the League of Ireland will get the chance to go across the water.
Even,
so they need to have something when they finish, because, you know, it can be tough, and it's not nice to hear that fellas have gambling addictions and stuff like this. And
you can see how it happens, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've never... Look, I don't know anything about horses, so I've no interest in that side of it. You know, if I was going to bet on anything, it'd be football. But, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to put a bet on anywhere. But I can see fellas that literally they finish training and they'll go to the bookies. And this is, Jesus, 10 years ago when I was, you know, playing, and when I was full time then, and there's lads that'd be in the bookies all day long.
And it's dangerous now because you can do it on your phone. And if you're in the bookies, people will have some comprehension of what you're up to, whereas in your phone, you can just.
Absolutely.
You're a good example as well of what can go wrong in football because of the injury you sustained so early. And I was shocked. I remember you showed me the scar there last year. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Yeah.
What was the nature of it?
It was a tumour in my knee. So, like, I've torn my ACL twice in the other knee, but that's not the one that gives me bother. It's the tumour. I had to more or less get a bone graft from my hip to reconstruct my knee when I was 19. And then I had a reoccurrence of it about a year later, so I had to more or less had to snap me medial to do it the second time, and then I had another reoccurrence 2 years later after that. So 2003 2004 2006. So, you know, the surgeon at the time said, look, it's the closest thing you'll get to a career ending injury at the time. But
how about, like, in repercussions other than that, was it dangerous sort of down the line?
No, it wasn't. It was a malignant growth, but it wasn't life threatening. So they, you know, got rid of it, and that was fine. If it was life threatening, it would have been, I think the percentage was, there was a 3 in 10 chance I would have lived past 5 years. And they would have cut my leg off there and then. So people will say I was unlucky, and I think I'm the fortunate man.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so getting to the lads who say you're unlucky, how far could you have gotten, do you think, in the game if you hadn't had that setback? Because I know it's an impossible question to answer, but you didn't exactly have a bad career with it.
No. I can remember I played, Mick McCarthy had just come in as manager after Howard Wilkinson, and I played one game. We were playing against Man United in the Resies, and I was marking Quinton Fortune, and he got taken off at half time because he didn't get a touch. But I can remember Mick after the game, we were just sitting in the dressing room there, and he said, you're the closest thing I've seen to Stephen Carr. So I was like this, gone, class, I'm delighted with life anyway. So I came in the next day, and Kevin Kilbane comes in, he goes, what are you smiling at? And I just went, I had a decent game last night. And he says, and I said, Mick was buzzing with me. And he goes, what did he say? And I said, I told him more or less what Mick had said, and he just went, nah. And my heart sank. And he goes, he says, you're a far better player, far better footballer than Stephen Carr. And I just went,
yeah.
But literally,
last week's guest, Kevin Kilbane.
We had Kev sitting here last week. Yeah.
Kev's class. Yeah. Ah, what a man. What a man. No, but, like, and, you know, that was it. And that was in March. And then I got called up to the Irish under-21s because Thomas Butler pulled out with injury. And I tore my cruciate.
It was Albania. Yeah. So is that the first major injury that is the origins to the tumour?
Tearing my cruciate actually saved me being able to play. Because in January that year, I had played in the FA Cup and got stretchered off. And that was the trigger, the tumor.
That was that, okay.
But it was misdiagnosed as a cyst. It grew four times the size in 6 months. So my knee started to distort. So I was going back for a checkup on my cruciate anyways, and I said it to him. And he stuck a syringe in to try and get fluid, and there was nothing there. So I went back and went to a specialist. And yeah, I was diagnosed then. And it was, what, on a Friday? I was in on Monday. I was diagnosed on the Wednesday, and I had the surgery then and was in hospital for 2 weeks. And yeah, that was it. So,
yeah. What was Mick like? I've heard great stories about Mick's, how he's dealt with. Richard Sadler has spoken about his own experience and a couple of others. How was he to deal with it through that?
Do you know what it is? Like, Mick to me is one of the best. He really is. Like, I'd left Sunderland in 2004. After, I suppose, I was rehabbing for about 5 or 6, 7 months after I had the second tumour done. And I moved back to Sligo then in the April or May the following year in 2005. So I had a reoccurrence of the tumour in 2006, and I got this phone call at home. It was like 11 in the morning. I was in bed. So I went out and answered it, and it was Mick McCarthy ringing the house phone in Sligo. And he just goes, I've heard that you've just been diagnosed with another tumour. He said, literally, the club is open to you in any capacity you need. You know, and I was like, you know, to me, he's one of the best I've met. He's a gent. Absolute gent.
He didn't need to do that.
He didn't need to do it. Absolutely not. And any time he came over to, like, we played against Wolves. He was manager of Wolves, and we played them with Bowles in a friendly.
Matt Doherty game, was it? When Matt Doherty got the move off the back?
It was the following game. All right, yeah, because he played in that game, and Mick was impressed with him. And then he came back. We played Villa a couple of days later.
Oh, okay.
And he marked Ashley Young out of the game. So he brought him over then. And Mick's one of the classiest men I've met.
Yeah, nice. You still had a fairly decent career for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suppose when I went back after I had the tumour down that time, my brother was playing with Finn Harps. So I said to him, can I go up training with him? You know, and Felix Healy.
That's Ian, is it?
Yeah.
Remember ex-Go United, yeah?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
He was a very young lad at Go United, I think 16 maybe. He
17,
might, yeah.
16, 17.
Don O'Riordan had a big policy of bringing in young guys.
Yeah, I can remember I was chatting to John Gill a couple of weeks ago that played against Sligo. So I was up at the game and he says, your brother's still playing? And I just went, no. And he goes, I got a 15-match ban because of him. Yeah, so it was one of them that Ian, he said he more or less assassinated the winger in front of the bench, and there was a big ruction, and John Gill went out and headbutted him.
He must have had the jump, did he?
He must have. Yeah, so I was like, this God, I've never heard this before. Like, so I didn't know, so I had to chat to my brother about it, and Ian goes, he said, I won the ball. You know, so.
Maybe like my age, 36?
Ian is, no, I'm your age. Ian's 38. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So what's he up to nowadays?
Plays a bit of Gaelic. Right. Just local, yeah. No, he had a bad injury a couple of years ago. He ruptured his patella tendon in little five-a-side. Mm. So his knee's not, you know, great, but kind of runs in the family.
Do you miss it? I mean, I know it's a very obvious question, but do you miss that involvement now? I know you were doing a bit of co-commentary last week at the Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers game, and you're still speaking to people, you're saying. So,
yeah.
But do you miss that involvement?
No. When I was at Longford that time, I was 33 and my body was starting to break down a bit, where, you know, you're getting a lot more aches and pains and stuff, and like my knees have been through the mill a bit, so I was probably finished with football in my head before I decided to knock it on the head, and I left mid-season that. I left in the July, and I was done with it. And I still am, to be honest. Mm. You know, it's like I could go for a game of football with the lads and like I'm in pain for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, so I just go, I've done a lot better than I should have, considering. So I'm happy with that, and I'm happy to let it go. I'm happy to go and watch games, do commentary, if people want me to do it. But I suppose somebody said to me, when you're finished with it in your head and you're done with it, you're happy. When I left England and came back, I wasn't.
Mm.
You know, I couldn't leave that. My last competitive game was my under 21 debut. So I went back playing, and you know, I've done all right, I suppose, over the years. So,
how did it hinder you, like, in terms of what you could produce?
No, at the time, like, you know, when I was like in 2008 with Bowles, I was probably the fittest I ever was. So it didn't hinder me at all. But over years, then I suppose your knee deteriorates a little bit more and more. And
was it left or right, the tumor?
Right knee.
Because you had an amazing strike of the ball for a. defender.
Yeah.
Like from lack of backlift and all that.
I could strike a ball, yeah, but in fairness, I could knock the chips out of a child's hand in the stand as well. So it's not necessarily that they were always on target. It was one of the things I had from a kid. I could strike a ball and thankfully that carried through a wee bit. So.
I suppose we've a European heavy show today. Your experience of Europe, like, it must be a special, special time for especially League of Ireland player.
Absolutely. For them top teams, it's the best games that they're going to play all year.
Better than a cup final?
Well, no, it's cup finals are great, but you've already played them four times maybe that particular year. So you know what they are. It's very much an unknown quantity of what you're going to be playing against. You know, like say Red Bull, when we played them years ago, you're looking at that. They've got money to throw players and stuff like that. With Dundalk, we went to Luxembourg and you don't know what to expect. And I can just remember, because in fairness, the Dundalk team was well drilled. They're still as fit as they were then.
Yeah.
You know, and I can remember we beat them 2-0. Richie scored two, Richie Towell. And the report was after the game, their manager had said that we were expecting them to be competitive, because I suppose that's what they say about all Irish teams, to be competitive. But he said we didn't expect weightlifters with technical ability, you know, and you know, the way Stephen plays, where it's all methodical. He's there three in the middle and he's, you know, trying to utilise the wingers, be as expansive as you can when you have the ball, and just play, I suppose, in this day and age, the right way. But trying to do that, you know, I think it'll carry Dundalk as well, you know, on when they're playing Riga.
Yeah. Thursday, yeah.
Do you want to call out Brian Murphy now then? If we talk European memories and Red Bull. I just know if we talk about European memories, which is someone will send us a message and go, oh, make a reference to Red Bull. But he didn't call, right?
He didn't call. And I can remember
this
when...
This is Daly Mountain. What year are we?
2009, I think. I'm trying to think. If Drogheda won the league in 07, Bowes won it in 08. So this would have been your first Champions League.
It was
Joey and Doe played... amazingly in the away game from what
he scored. We drew one all over there.
Was this the first or second round then?
It was the first tie that Bowes had played.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
See, what was the away score?
1-1.
1-1. And then it comes back and it's nil all, is it?
Nil all, yeah.
And then 10 minutes left or thereabouts.
No, it was 2 minutes left.
Two minutes left.
Yeah.
What happened then? It was
like there was a ball played. Your man hit a diagonal. He was trying to hit the Mark Yanko. Oh,
yeah, he was
big lad.
Yeah.
So he's still playing up front for someone somewhere now. You know,
Vancouver. I don't know, but Ken O'Mahon was there and challenged them. And I suppose, you know, at that time they'd had the lion's share possession for the whole game. I probably should have tucked in more. I expected them to challenge, and it went over their heads. So I was probably in a bad starting position. But I looked to my left to see was Murph there. And in my eye, I seen a striker kind of just edge towards the keeper. So I tried to just flick it in the air to volley it away. But your man read it and jumped like a salmon and headed it over Murph. You know, it's one of them things. I didn't obviously plan on doing that. But sometimes it just happens.
It just lives you with it for a while afterwards. It's only natural.
Yeah. Like, you know, I spoke to Dave Henderson at length about it a lot. And he just goes, it's keeper's fault, is what he said. He goes, if he's coming off his line and he doesn't call... You know, so look at it. I'll just put it down to a mix-up.
He's definitely one of the best keepers I've seen in the League of Ireland. But
probably the best.
Yeah, but his career in England, I often talk to people about this, that he's kind of had a great career probably in terms of the money he's made, but he's hardly played.
Yeah.
You know, and you could see both sides of the argument, but I just can't see if I were a footballer that I'd be happy to be on the bench every week, almost regardless of what you're on, within reason, obviously.
I know, yeah. But I can remember when he went to Ipswich, Richard Wright was number one there, and Murph was number two, and Richard Wright left to be third choice keeper at Man City because he was on 15 grand a week at Ipswich, and they brought him up to 25 or 35 to be third choice or fourth choice keeper. Like, so, you know, I think it's the... You know, I suppose it's not exactly taxing on your body if you're just sitting there and training all the time. So financially, you can get a lot more out of being a third choice goalkeeper.
You see Renegal Martin, who was a Pats a couple of years ago. He's still moving. I think he went to Bristol City or someone during the week. You know, it's a choice that some goalkeepers make. And
I just want to play.
I can appreciate that. Mm. And I do remember Brian Murphy saying he wanted to go back to play. But I guess you put yourself in their shoes, and you know you get
you don't know the family situation.
I don't know about that, but like, you know, you get a decent contract put in front of you, and you know if you're injured, clubs will drop you. you know, to a degree as well. So if someone's willing to offer you a 3-year deal, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about the morals of that. Yeah. You know, like
it's not so much.
No, I know what you're saying. I know exactly what your point is. Yeah. You know,
it's not quite Winston Bogart now, where it was just like completely taking the piss at Chelsea. But it's like that.
It's
such a short career, basically, is what I'm saying.
When at Sunderland, Thomas Sorensen was the number one goalkeeper. Andy Marriott was there for 3 years, I think it was, and he played maybe in a League Cup or something like that, and you know, that was it. But win bonuses alone, he's still getting, if he's on the bench, he's getting his bonus for being on the bench, because as a sub keeper, if you're a sub keeper, you get the same bonus as if you played. So like, he made over 100 grand in win bonuses that particular year because they finished seventh, you know. So it's huge money for doing nothing, really.
The other memory of that Red Bull thing was the arrogance of their manager at the time, who basically...
Hoop Stevens.
He didn't fancy at all, really.
He's Dutch, isn't he?
Dutch, yeah.
But it follows suit their
He ticked the national star. I remember him the day before the game. I can't remember something about his comments. Mark remembers something about after match where he said he wouldn't take one of the players.
Not one of our players impressed him at all. They wouldn't. None of our players would get into his squad. I suppose Joey and Doe played in 2 World Cups, I suppose, yeah.
when you think about that, because that was obviously just before the crash as such, you know, that time. And like that Bowes team had that near miss against Salzburg, draw to the year previous.
So
that,
close.
That near miss against Kiev. Mm-hmm. And like there are these sliding doors moments, but like the league had got to a really good standard then in terms of the top teams. And I think it still hasn't, I think it's finally recovered, you know, but they were very competitive teams. Absolutely. You were part of then.
Absolutely.
You know?
There was new professionalism coming in with like obviously Paul Doolin at Drogheda as well. And you know, I was even looking back in the Shells Deportivo game today because Ollie Cahill had spoken about that in the draw of the game. But Jesus, there were some unbelievable performances in those days.
Hugely, because, you know, we're going to obviously raise our games because there's nothing expected of us. And, you know, I'm not saying that they'll take us for granted, but they ultimately do, because they're not going to see an Irish team as, you know, something that's going to challenge them, really. And, you know, look at it, and that's fair enough. But ultimately, I think at grassroots level in the League of Ireland, you need to have 12 competitive teams. You can't have a divide like you do. You know, Dundalk are only going to improve if they're playing hard games every week.
I couldn't agree more.
Going into Europe. So them kind of games can stifle them a wee bit. I'm not saying that they'll be a little bit relaxed and stuff like that going into, say, playing UCD or something like this, but you know, you can't compare playing against Shamrock Rovers every week to playing against UCD, because 99 times out of 100 they're going to lick UCD, really.
Yeah, well, speaking of the Dock, I think let's actually go over to Latvia now and get a bit of perspective, because we have just the unusual situation, not unusual, but it's in the first Champions League round, Dundalk are seeded this year. So this is something that we've been aspiring towards with our champions over a long period. And rather than having that Red Bull or that, you know, that Bate Borisov or that Legia Warsaw at the first round, they play Riga FC from Latvia. So
I still get to suspect the Riga team won't be too unhappy to get the
ball. This is what we're going to do. Yeah. But let's go and hear from Edmunds Novikis, hopefully we have his name right, who's a football journalist in Latvia, to give us the lowdown on Riga.
Edmund, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
We have to get the pronunciation of the name right here.
We got to pronounce your name properly. Can you help us out here?
Edmunds.
And the surname?
Novikis.
Novikis.
Very good.
Yes,
exactly. Okay. Let's. What's the weather like in Latvia at the moment? Dundalk will be over there next week.
Actually, now summer is going down and it's not so warm like it was last month, so maybe 15 degrees for Celsius.
That's all right, yeah. What's the expectation over there, in your journalist over there, what's the general expectation in the press? I would imagine that Riga were quite happy to get Dundalk.
Yeah, of course, if we look at the other possibilities, other options, then Dundalk was one of the best choices, one of the best options for us. But at the same time, of course, also we understand that Dundalk has a bigger experience in Eurocups and really good record of the games. And Riga FC participates in Eurocups just the second year in their history. It's a new club, so we understand who is the favorite here.
So what would be the strength of Riga FC? I mean, I'm thinking years ago Skonto Riga would have been a sort of a regular opponent for Irish sides in Europe, and they were a strong team. And this Riga FC is an amalgamation, as you mentioned, it's a new club. I think, was it CSKA Sofia they played last year, and they went very close. So, I mean, is this a club that has significant financial backing? You know, has there been heavy investment in this team? I see, you know, what type of operation are we talking about here?
Riga FC is like a biggest spender in Latvian league. They have owner from Russia, really rich person who invests really big money. Maybe they lack some of, I don't know, stability, sporting, footballing people in the club, and sometimes they are a little bit chaotic with their decisions. But all in all, they are Latvian champions. They are the best club in Latvia. And if you talk about the style of the team, about the sporting side, then I think that Riga FC has a really good style for the first game tomorrow in Dundalk. They are a very tough team, which plays very good defensively. You could imagine that a champion is playing attacking football, score many goals, like Barcelona or City, but they are not that type of team, actually. They rarely dominate in ball possession. They are a really tough team and disciplined team. So I think it will be really, really tough task for your team to make those goals, which you need to come here with the good feelings. So our team is really good in the defensive terms.
Okay, so who would the strongest players, like who would be the outstanding players to look out for in the Riga FC side?
You know, it will sound pathetic, but really the strong side is the team, because if you would ask about their main competitors, another club from Riga, I would say you in the first second who is the leader. But in the case of Riga FC, there are no one bright person who makes the result or something like that. Last year, when Riga became the champions, their best player was goalkeeper. He was he got the best player award in a galas. So this year is the same: discipline, good defense, good teamwork, and of course there are some bright footballers. Maybe I could mention Tomislav Šarić, but actually he's holding midfielder. He makes big job. He makes runs from one side to another, box to box. And also you will not see him often to score the goal or to make the decisive pass. So it's more about team, not about strong personalities. And if we talk about weak sides, I can say that it's attacking options, attacking moves, because Riga has some difficulties with scoring goals.
What's the story with the coaching situation? Because you seem to have had like five or six coaches in this no time at all. And could you explain why there's been such a change in that regard?
Yeah, as I mentioned, sometimes Riga FC is a little bit chaotic. Mm-hmm. They are making, I would like to be diplomatic about our football, but really sometimes it looks like Russian business. They take one player, then they take another player, they take one coach, then take another coach. And they're just searching the options, the best options. They are not waiting for long. They are not patient. And so these changes are really often. For example, this year, one coach came during the season, and he's really good coach. He made the title in Latvia with another club before. He's experienced coach, but he was fired after four games. Two of them was win and two was lost. So the club owner and club management is really impatient, and they are making very chaotic moves sometimes. But what can we say bad about them? They are champions, and they are making like they want.
Also, when Dundalk head over to Riga for the second leg, what sort of crowd will be there?
Oh, it's a big issue in Latvia. It's really poor situation about the crowd in Latvia. Maybe in Euro Cups there will be a little bit more spectators than usually. Maybe this will be like 2,000 or 3,000 spectators. But actually, when Latvian league games are played, there are sometimes just 300 or 400 of people. So football is not the most popular sport in Latvia.
Any good advice on bars for the Dundalk fans to go to?
The places to go?
Yeah.
It's the old city, like always. Every tourist from UK can just go to the old city.
What about tourists from Ireland?
It's the same story.
If you put your head on the block, how do you think it'll go?
Sorry?
If you put your prediction to the game, do you expect that it's going to be close? Obviously, you certainly seem to have a good kind of opinion of the defensive structure of the Riga team.
Yeah, so I think the decisive moment will be if Dundalk can score like a quick goal in the first half. Maybe if they do this, they will score the second and the third goal. But actually, I think that it could be really close game and maybe just one goal in a match. And it's not obligatory that Dundalk scores this one goal. I think that it will be really tough and maybe tougher than you think, because I know about your record in Europe, but actually, as I said, Riga plays very defensively football, very organized football, and it's really hard to break them.
Okay, Edmunds, it's been great having you on. I really appreciate your input. And I'm over there next week, so I might see you over at the second leg. So thanks very much for joining us in the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good luck, guys.
Thank you.
You can see as well, Mark, why, considering the draws that they could have gotten, they won't be unhappy to get Dundalk, and they will fancy their chances. In fact, I think they were at the... What Dundalk game were they at recently? Dundalk Rovers, and Dundalk actually weren't great on the night, but it probably added to their enthusiasm for the challenge ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first game after the break, I wouldn't take too much out of it, and Rovers had to not lose, and they did. But I'd be quite confident that Dundalk will get through. Regardless of them, I think, you know, Michael Duffy, Chris Shields is unreal.
You've got a great perspective on that, because you were at the start of the Dundalk journey, the start of the Stephen Kenny era. You were one of the players that were brought in.
Mountney and Hooban, I suppose, would have been there.
Shields and Mountney were the survivors in the previous year. Yeah, of course. Sorry, yeah, Hooban and...
Well, Shields came in late that year, actually, because he was over at Carlisle. There was talk of him signing for them. But like Stevie O'Donnell was probably the biggest one.
Andy Boyle would have come in, I suppose.
Richie Towell. John Sullivan was there. Keith Ward. There was a good few.
The Dundalk story kind of started around that, like their European story. I traced the Dundalk team back to that Hadrick Split era where they started performing
Europe. But 2013 was where the whole season started. Yeah. I mean, look, that was a move for you. We've spoken to Stevie before about his, you know, where is his career going? What were you thinking walking into Dundalk that day?
I didn't know, to be honest. I'd been away at the Irish under-16s, and Stephen Kenny had just taken over at Longford, and Brian Kerr brought him away. So I knew he was this unusual character. And I can remember Stevie O'Donnell there, probably in the first huddle that we played against Shamrock Rovers. He was there saying, look, we're all here for one reason or another. He said, we're a bunch of degenerates.
Is this the nil all in Oriel, first game?
Yeah, the first game, Gary McCabe missed the penalty. But that was it. And, you know, we managed to push Pats.
So what was his follow-up from the bunch
wrong
of...
either.
What was his follow-up from the bunch of degenerates?
He's very straight talking. He's a good fella to light a fire under and let him go off on a tangent. He's class.
Big week for him, though, because he's obviously done an awful lot of homework on Riga. This is his first year in the job, which Rory Higgins had. He's been out to see them twice. So there is a little bit of pressure on him, obviously, to get it right.
I'd have no worries about Stevie or Rory Higgins. I've known the two of them. Jeez, I've known Stevie since he was 12 years of age, when Ian used to play with his brother at Galway United. I can remember going to see him in the Kennedy Cup under 13. So I've known Stevie for the best part of 20 years. His attention to detail football-wise as a player or outside of football, it's just like he's football mad.
Sorry, we were actually going Chris Shields, though. At that stage, if the first time you saw Chris Shields in the training pitch, did you see him becoming the player that he's become?
No.
Multiple league winner and sort of player of the year contender and so on.
No, I can remember playing against Shieldsy when I was playing, say, left back for Bulls, and you're there waiting for Dara Doyle to hit a diag at the start of a game, and Shieldsy's just running at me, and I'm like, this gone, he's just going to headbutt me. he probably still would, but
you take the ball afterwards.
He's unreal. Like he does so much work that goes unnoticed. You know, thankfully he's getting the plaudits that he deserves. He's been, you know, one of the best in that position that I've seen. Not always the prettiest, but he does what has to be done all the time. Mm. He's an excellent, excellent player.
When you left the club, I mean, because again, you didn't play that much in 2014, mm-hmm. but did you know then, this club is going in the right way?
Absolutely. You know, you can even see with, you know, Patrick McElhenney going in there, he'll be huge for them in Europe, because technically he's the best in the league.
And his Jack season has kind of just taken off as well now. Yeah, like
you look at Dundalk, you know, they didn't come out of the blocks hugely fast, but they're designed to not be that way. They hit their stride coming towards the window or coming towards the break. And then, you know, I from the start, even when Rovers won their first five games of the season, I was there saying Dundalk will win it by 10 or more.
Really?
Yeah, I still believe they will.
What gave you that confidence, just that ability to peak as
absolutely.
The season goes on?
Absolutely. They get very, very few injuries because they condition their bodies that well. So, like, even when Stephen Kenny was manager there, that particular year I didn't play, the back four never got injured the whole year. He didn't change it the whole year.
That's been a slight change since he left. They rotate more.
Yeah, they are, and it's going to, I suppose, upset the apple cart with Boyle signing back, you know.
Brian Gartland signed a new deal today, isn't
he? He did. Been a great servant. Andy, to me, is, you know, coming back from England or Scotland, he's the best defender in the league. Gannon is flying, and Massey isn't having it in his own way this year. Jarvis is doing really well, so, you know, you need competition for places. But I suppose John Gill, Vinny, Rory, their job is to try and keep everybody happy. So it's not an easy thing to do.
Are you impressed by how Vinny has like transitioned to being the front man?
No, I'm not surprised at all, to be honest. I've known Vinny for, like, since I joined Dundalk, and I knew he would have seamlessly went into the role anyways. So I'm not surprised with anything. He's more or less just kept everything in place. He has his own philosophies, yes, but he's kept the style the same way. And I said it, when I'd done the commentary for the Sligo Dundalk game, I said signing the season for them is Rory Higgins, really, because he's such a meticulous thinker. Like, I spoke to him after the game and they'd won 4-0 and he was fuming. You know, because on that particular night, it didn't show the problems that Sligo caused them, but probably Dundalk caused themselves, really. But I said it's always easier to be critical in victory than in defeat, you know. So, they're going to steamroll the rest of the league, to be honest.
It's more important, like, I just, whatever about the league, this is so big for them. And how do you think it'll go, Dan? It's very hard to
know.
You're speculating.
We've heard from Edmonds there just about Riga, but no one really knows. You have an idea of levels, and you would hope that Dundalk being seeded, that they should be in a position to be stronger. Like, you generally look at the results at this round, and being seeded is a bloody big advantage, and you can hope that they can make the best of it. I think they're still finding their stride. I don't think they've been near their best recent weeks, but I think last Friday, you know, they mixed things up. They started Boyle, they started Benson, they rested Hooban, or, you know, they went for Georgie Kelly. But I think there's a sense of trying to get lads minutes as well, and just try and sharpen up. And I don't know, it's going to be a full house tomorrow night. You know, you look at Riga, they don't actually have a play in front of huge crowds and stuff. I just hope that, like, that they make the best of the home leg, because I think Dundalk will score away. You'd always fancy that Dundalk team to score away.
There,
so I think the key to the tie is, like, just
nil all or 1-0.
Not a silly concession at home that leaves you in a bit of bother.
There's no.
Because I think I think if they keep them scoreless tomorrow, I think I've no doubt that they would go through.
There's definitely no complacency from the Dundalk camp, and that's just so. Like, I've always made the point, Irish teams can't take any team for granted in Europe. We're just not good.
They won't.
They definitely won't. Even though they're seeded.
There's other European games this week that we need to discuss.
Best of luck to Dundalk, and obviously the return leg will be live on Air Sports
Next Wednesday as well.
Next Wednesday. Cork City. I was at the game on Friday night with Air Sports. Kudos to the boy Owen, who did his first job in producing the show.
Owen's in the room at the time.
Great job.
At the moment.
Game itself wasn't.
Johnny is just shouting out to someone who's 2 minutes away.
The boy Owen. Did you watch the game, Dan?
I caught some of the post-match commentary. I actually enjoyed the new Johnny Ward. It's like TV Johnny Ward. Mm. He's a bit kinder than podcast Johnny Ward. He extolled the virtues of everything.
I met John
Caulfield,
actually.
Very positive performance.
Met John Caulfield beforehand. Wasn't a particular... It was a little bit awkward. Put
Frosty?
He was polite.
Civil.
Civil, yeah.
Because I like, you know, after the match with John Carter, you know, praising the commitment or the spirit, then you're going to come on here 4 days later and probably slaughter them. You know what I'm saying?
What are they, though? The third or fourth last? Like, as in, I thought they showed, and I thought the crowd were really behind them.
I think post-match John needs to bring some
Bowes,
podcast, John.
I thought Bowes were very, very ordinary on the night. Mandrew and Ward trying to fit into the same team, struggling up front. Like, Cork are where they are because...
You didn't tell that to Keith long afterwards, though, did you? You probably said, good point, Keith.
I said you've had 2-0 all draws in the week. You obviously need a striker, basically, was what I said. Okay. Cork tried hard. We'll talk to Declan Kerry.
We need
now
to discuss the situation at Cork generally, and we're going to go and talk to Declan Kerry, who's the chairman, because there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of weeks. Months, I suppose, but particularly weeks, I think.
A bogey WhatsApp message, as you said.
Well, yeah, there's a few other mistruths going around, but we thought we'd get Declan Kerry on to maybe discuss the actual picture with Cork City at the moment.
Declan Kerry, Cork City chairman, how are you keeping?
Very good, Johnny. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. It's obviously a big week for the club. Back in Europe, had a succession of years now where you're obviously expecting to be involved in Europe. What's the expectation? There seemed to be a good buzz down at Turner's Cross Friday night. Obviously not a huge crowd, but the fans very much behind the team.
Yeah, definitely, Johnny. Look, as you said, there wasn't a massive crowd by any means, but you wouldn't know that if you walked down Curragh Road outside the stadium, especially towards the second half of the game there. The atmosphere was electric, and look, we're hoping to have a similar performance from the crowd and the team on Thursday night, and hopefully get a positive result in Europe. Yeah, you know, you can't beat European nights in Turner's Cross. The atmosphere will just be unbelievable there. So, yeah, hopefully now the people of Cork will come out and get behind the lads and. Yeah, as I said, positive result then that we can take over to Luxembourg.
Yeah, but Declan, we just wanted to speak to you. I mean, obviously there's a few things going on around Cork at the moment. And without getting necessarily bogged down in who said what and some of the, I suppose, inaccurate speculation that has surrounded the club in recent times, the club felt compelled to release a statement last week to address some comments that had been made about the club's finances and the picture this year. So, I guess we're almost just looking to outline what the situation is at the moment. I mean, where do things stand with Cork City as we are now, midway through 2019, in terms of the health of the club, the direction of the club, and how you feel things are set now going forward?
Yeah, look, Dan, to be honest, we had a difficult couple of weeks there from kind of May to June. We didn't have a home league game there for 6 weeks. It was obviously a difficult time for us from a cash flow perspective. But look, it's nothing that we haven't seen before, even maybe 12 months prior or in previous seasons. And I think maybe that might have been blown out of proportion. I don't know where this kind of speculation and incorrect information came from. We gave a very firm update to our members at a general meeting at the end of May, where we gave exact figures. You know, we gave the current health of the club, as you said there. We gave a 6, 12 and 18 month outlook. Everything was, our members were very satisfied with the update that they got. And, we felt that we had their trust that we could take the club on in the next, foreseeable future, and obviously going into next season as well. As I said, did have a recent difficult time. Look, to be honest, as I said, every League of Ireland club would feel similar. I think Sligo Rovers even released a statement there as well during the break about their lack of home games and the fixture issues that they experienced. But we're in a good place, to be honest, Dan and Johnny. You know, we've thriving merchandise and commercial areas of the club. Our fundraising as well has also taken off recently with the whole Winagaff draw that we've got going on down in Cork now as well, which is a first for in Cork in general, and obviously for a League of Ireland club as well. I know they're quite popular up the country as well. But look, yeah, we're in a good place, and I think all the board are very happy and positive with the way things are going at the moment.
With all due respect, though, you referenced Sligo Rovers there, who obviously haven't been in Europe in some time, and where has the money gone from Cork City because of your European exploits? Maybe you're not making as much money from these European games as people think. I know you have a big squad, but it just seems a surprise that you could be in any difficulty at all, really, considering the years you've had.
Yeah, look, I guess it is, as you mentioned there, Johnny, the European prize money, people just see a figure that's flashed up based on what UEFA release in terms of prize money, and people think that's automatically lodged into the club's bank account. Obviously, there's, significant expense in travelling around to these countries. And, unfortunately, we did draw two massive teams last year in Legia Warsaw and Rosenborg. But unfortunately, Norway is known to be one of the most expensive countries in Europe as well. But, in previous years as well, look, we invested heavily in the first team squad, and this year things aren't as positive as we would have hoped. We're seventh or eighth in the table at the moment, and look, I know teams above us might have a few games in hand, so there's a bit of leveling out to happen there as well. But look, yeah, it's I guess the situation we're in, we're not exactly happy where we are in the league table, but you know, obviously we're confident we can turn things around, and you know, the I do think we have the squad of players there and the management team to do so. So yeah, we're positive enough.
Yeah, I mean, Declan, I think if we were to look over the last decade of Irish sport, I would nearly say, you know, Forrest, like the Cork story is one of the great success stories. I mean, the club was dead, you know, and the club was saved, and you've reached great heights. You know, you've won a league, you've won a double. I've heard you speak elsewhere today, you know, speaking about it, still has a seven-figure wage bill at the club. So, I mean, you're running a substantial business there, I mean, as it stands. I just wonder, and I think, you know, this is a difficult debate because you've got this club on a great footing by being a fan-owned club, but to compete with Dundalk and compete with Shamrock Rovers now, I mean, Shamrock Rovers have a fan-owned model, 50%, but they have private investment. Dundalk, as we know, is something very different. Has Forrest reached a ceiling in terms of what it can do? In terms of without needing to maybe look at a slight tweak to the model in terms of attracting investment, or do you believe that the club can still hit the heights that it has in recent years by continuing as you are at the moment?
Yeah, look, Dan, I think I don't think we're too far off, to be honest. Anyway, in terms of the you know, the finances, I think we, you know, this year we had an extremely competitive budget. Obviously, the management team opted to go for, you know, a larger squad. And thought that would be enough to kind of keep us up there in the, you know, the top three positions and duking it out with Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. But look, yeah, I know you kind of mentioned there, did we reach a ceiling? But, you know, this year we increased our merchandise targets, our commercial targets and our fundraising. This was kind of a significant jump over last year. You know, merchandise 30%, commercial around 45%, and 100% on fundraising, and we're well on target to reach that. And we think with the recent additions we've got in the off the field staff, obviously Paul Wicherlino has just entered his second year with the club. Paul DC was added to the commercial sector as well, and he's got vast experience in sponsorship and the whole commercial space. So we think there's significant opportunity as well down in Cork. You know, aside from Cove Ramblers, who wouldn't have as much of a significant presence in Cork as we would, we think there's a significant opportunity for us to capitalise on that, increase the, you know, the brand awareness of the club as well. And, you know, we do a lot of work in the community around, you know, the schools in Cork. And look, unfortunately, we don't have trophies this season to bring to those schools. But when, you know, I've been on some of these visits myself, and when you see the players going to these schools and the way a classroom of 20, 30 students just light up when they see Garrod Morrissey or, you know, Gary Buckley walk into the classroom, the Cork City tracksuit, it gives us all hope that there is, you know, a greater ceiling that we can break through.
Because is it a case that almost then, you talk about the plan for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, that, I don't know, I'm not using the, because it's still an FAI Cup to fight for, but is there an element of sort of regrouping, not writing this season off, because there's still stuff that you can achieve, but is there a sense of, you maybe just, if this season maybe isn't going to go the way that you envisaged it, that you maybe just need to get to the end of this season and then, I suppose, regroup again and be stronger at the start of next year?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie down. That's definitely something where we'll be looking to do. And, you know, we'll be looking to make changes to the club as a whole from, you know, looking at all of the structures of the club, from the budgeting process itself. And, you know, obviously, it's well known as well that the majority of our players are out of contract. So I know a lot of the players at the moment will be kind of, you know, looking to prove themselves as well over the coming weeks and months, which we think will be a motivating factor as well. And look, yeah, it's definitely, look, League of Ireland clubs, I think it's one of the main advantages of this league. You can have a poor season and then the following year, it could be a complete paradigm shift. You could turn it on its head with just a few key recruitments and, you know, a bit of a change maybe in the back room or whatnot, which we've already done this season as well. And we've seen the performances of the team improve in a short space of time. So look, yeah, at the end of the season for any League of Ireland club, I think, is an opportunity to regroup and just look at the way things are working and where we can make improvements. And look, the guys we have on the board at the moment are highly skilled in those areas. They've, you know, we've got entrepreneurs on the board and guys that have managed large projects. And, you know, we'd always look at lessons learned and where we can, you know, obviously cut back, make savings, and where we have opportunities as well, as I said, to increase revenues in certain areas. So look, we'll definitely reassess. It'll be an opportunity for us, you know, as a board to get together and work with the club staff of where we want to go, and we do have plans even over the next month or two to get together and have a full kind of away day amongst ourselves as a board, okay. and just kind of, you know, nail down what our strategy will be and kind of go from there, really.
Yeah, because I think one of the quirks is, and I mean, it's important to point out that, you know, the current board inherited, I suppose, a budget plan from a previous board.
Yeah.
And that was something to happen. Now, at the same time, I'm looking at the structure of the club there and think, does that need to be looked at, where you have a situation where you have an election 2 months after a budget is devised? I mean, that was always going to lead to potential problems. I mean, is that something that needs to be looked at in future years, that the election takes place before a budget and strategy is drawn up? Because it has seemed to have created a bit of confusion maybe about direction and decision making, or maybe attributing decisions.
Yeah, look, that's definitely something we took note of. Unfortunately, as everyone knows, Pat Shine was a board member last year as well, and he sadly passed away. So his seat was also available there in the recent AGM. So, look, there would have only been maybe four members then that would have been new to the board at that stage. Also, we had a board member, Mike Durham, step away there in April for personal reasons. Mm-hmm. So, look, and then there was myself. Obviously, I was on the board last year as well, elected in January 2018. So, look, it was definitely, very unfortunate the way we had so many board members all at once. You know, in some ways, you could look at it as a positive, you know, brand new ideas coming in. But obviously, we always had that continuity between boards when they were transitioning from one to the other. And in this case, you know, we did have five new members, and then we co-opted a new board member there as well in May, Dave Alton. It's definitely something we're looking at. Obviously, you know, the way the AGM is structured, I think it has to take place within a certain time frame of the end of the financial year. So I think we're limited there. I think I even tried to raise this with our legal advisor last year about, you know, potentially having the election in September, when we would typically have a general meeting. But unfortunately, it's not possible due to the legalities of how the trust is set up and the cooperative model that we have. But look, definitely, I think there's still things we can do to fix that. Like, you could have, you know, formal handover processes from one board to another, and, you know, try to maintain that that continuity in other ways. So it's definitely something we're looking at, Dan. Yeah.
Just finally, you'll likely be playing Rangers if you get through the game against Progress. How important is it that you might get through, and all the kind of money that would entail in terms of the future of Cork City over the next few years?
Yeah. Johnny, look, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, no, we're never going to turn down that kind of money that tie would attract. Like, Rangers, you know, almost guarantee full sellout of Turner's Cross. Obviously the additional 260k that would come from getting through the round of Europe. It's something we would never budget for prospective money anyway like that. We always only include guaranteed prize money in our budget. And look, if come November, we know that there's an additional 260k coming into the club's coffers from UEFA prize money, that certainly strengthens us going into 2020, I'm not going to lie, and beyond. We'll obviously plan to be prudent with any additional funds that come in. Like, even we've got, as I mentioned, this Win a Gaff fundraiser, which could, you know, bring significant funds into the club as well. And, you know, that's definitely something we look at as we look at it, you know, put safeguards in place, obviously, and try and put money away for that rainy day. As you say, I know it's an old cliche, but it's definitely something the current board are fully committed on doing as well.
Thanks very much for your time, and very best of luck on Thursday.
Yeah. Cheers, Johnny. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Declan. Thanks very much.
I don't know, Dan, the Cork, fair play to Declan for coming on there. I find their situation, I think they've been a bit profligate in terms of, not the club, but they haven't managed the situation that well. You're at the game, I was at the game Friday night, they're a million miles off challenging all of a sudden, and they're a team that, they're probably somewhat fortunate that the two teams down at the bottom have been cut adrift so much, because they're a team that could actually get into relegation trouble. And Marco Sullivan coming back, got a good reception from the crowd. He's 36 years of age, did well when he came on and all that, but I don't know how Cork City have gotten to this.
That to me was that's a get to the end of the season type of signing.
Cummins going to Rovers.
It ties in with what they're doing. I think they are, Declan alluded to it, but I think there's an element to just get through this season and regroup. And like, I'm not casting doubt. I know I asked a question about it. I'm not trying to cast doubt on the Forest model at all. I mean, it's been fantastic in terms of how it worked. And I think there's a natural wariness there about, ceding any control, because it's very important for them to have the control. And they've done a good job, but they've lost their way a bit, certainly. Like, John Caulfield is both the best manager the Cork have had yet he's also someone that had made mistakes in recent seasons. The two sentences aren't like you can say both of those things, and you can, and they can both be right. And there's no doubt that between the budget he was given and the decision to spend all of that budget on players, and then the how money was apportioned in terms of quantity over quality in terms of the squad, and clearly maybe he couldn't get the quality that he wanted in terms of maybe they couldn't attract two or three top players, but the solution to that was almost to fill the squad with just options and numbers, and without it really seeming to be part of a plan, you know, to, well, we identify this position, we need to sort out this position. It was more sort of
scattergun.
Like, you know that show Supermarket Sweep years ago with Dale Winton presenting that, and you got like Lashed a minute and you just run through, and then you end up with like
Graham
crackers,
Cummins.
Beans, and you've got six packets of crisps and like don't even need them and you've no bread, you know, and there's just been all over the shop, right? And I think that's been a problem that they've had.
The other thing about them, apart from when Sean Maguire has been playing, they've been pretty poor in Europe. Like, take out Sean Maguire, which we have to remember, they went out to the Icelandic team when Marco Sullivan, I think,
no,
scored.
The Europe wasn't great. But
they were rubbish.
But I guess what I'm saying is that, like, it's a great structure, the fan-owned structure, but it's a volunteer structure to a degree as well. And just clearly they need to take stock. And that's I think that this board that's there now, and I know there's been some criticism of them too, and maybe we didn't ask all the questions that everyone would want to ask. But it just seems like they need to just regroup and gather themselves up, because that club has got such immense potential. Like it has the potential to be the best club in the country, and it's lost its way over seemingly in a remarkably quick period of time. And clearly when they won the double, they just weren't equipped at the time to, I don't know, respond to that. I don't know what you meant of that, Mark, as listening to the situation at Cork.
Like,
they're fourth last in the table there now, just under Sligo Rovers, we'll say.
Well, you could say that they're what, seven positions off top.
They're seventh. They're 30 points behind Dundalk.
I think you said earlier on that they had 29 players in their squad.
At one point earlier this year, I think they had 29 players in their squad.
At any given game day, you can only play 14.
Yeah.
You know, and that's taking your squad of 18. Subkeeper is very rarely ever going to be used.
Played very well against Preston, seemingly, Ty Grine the other night. Yeah. Very well. Yeah, former Go United.
Yeah.
But they haven't brought in young players either.
No, but that's what the problem is. Like, you look at Shamrock Rovers, for example, and they've got a really strong squad of 16 very good players. And then they have young lads that they're trying to blood in. You know, I would have thought that's, you know, with the catchment that Cork have down there, they've literally the whole of Munster to pick from, because there's no other football team really. Waterford, yeah, but, you know, I don't, it's literally a capitulation.
It is. It's
mental. Like.
Yeah, it seems incredible that they got into the Champions League and they played off pretty much the bulk of that price or that prize fund hike into a playing squad, but then just recruited really badly. And then naturally they probably had to cut back from that. But then you have this line, well, you know, there's been cuts this year and that's why they've struggled. But they struggled because they made bad signings last year.
The one
as well,
had
you know,
for
2018.
Like, he was kind of irreplaceable, Sean Maguire.
Alex, yeah.
We see now there's an unbelievable dearth of strikers. I know Bowes are definitely looking to strengthen, can't really find anyone.
If there was a top class striker available, Shamrock Rovers would sign him.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So Rovers going for Cummins.
Or Dundalk would just sign him, so Rovers couldn't get him. Though they have the best, arguably the best two in the league already.
You were working at the game. Cummins going to Rovers. I have to say, I did not see that coming. But apparently played quite well on Friday night without scoring.
He just, he's had very little game time down at Cork, and it showed, because whatever about the header off the crossbar, that can happen. As it was coming across, McGinty was going across, so he tried to angle it back the opposite way and he hit the crossbar. But he had two chances where he picked up great positions and he was lethargic looking and slow. And, you know, like he got the chance and got his shot away, but the keeper was lightning off the line. But I would have expected Graham Cummins, of what I have seen over years, would have like touched score. It looks like they're trying to emulate what Dundalk have in Pat Hoban, because they do use their wingers a lot. Their fullbacks were raiding all night. You know, look, I can't compare it to a normal game, because, you know, Sligo literally just parked the bus second half,
I think Shamrock Rovers had 24 shots off target. off target.
Well, there you go.
If that was the now the like I do think Dan Rovers are going into the game against Bran. I checked the odds earlier. They're 8-1 to win the away game. They're 3-1 to qualify. I think this will be very close. Bran are doing bang average in the league. Rovers, some of the football they've been playing, as Alan Cawley was saying during the week, their last three games have been the better team, but they've only won what? They've taken four points.
No, I think Rovers, like, it's stating the obvious. They've got what has held our teams back in sometimes in Europe. The stereotypical view would be ball retention, but they've got really good midfield players who can keep the ball. I'd be interested to see how he sets up the midfield in Europe. Will he just do it as he's done in the league? You know, in terms of, I'm not sure what the story is Aaron McInniff, actually, if he's still a bit away.
I think he's still out.
Yeah, but like, they've got Bulger, they've got Jack Byrne, they've got Dylan Watts, they have an array of options. I mean,
Gary O'Neill,
of course. Yeah, what do you make of their midfield strength, Mark?
And you know, like, I suppose if you look at it, to me, they've probably got the strongest midfield in the league. It was my first time to see Jack Byrne play, and I don't think I've seen a player in the league with better close control. Uses his body very well. He was very impressive and made them tick all night. And you didn't even mention Ronan Finn.
Of course, you keep forgetting one every time you mention it.
It's they've got a lot of options, and you can see that when the packet. Bulger is as lean as I've seen him look, and Bradley has said that he's back to his best, and he was excellent again the other night. But scoring goals is going to be a problem.
Mm, but they played so well over in Sweden last year. It was some different personnel.
Aaron Green hit the post.
Yeah, and so I think they're comfortable to go away and get a result and bring it back. And ironically, it's actually then, if they get into a position in Tala, can they press it home from there?
I think there'll be a situation this game where Bran haven't had the ball for a while and the fans are thinking, what's going on here? We were like hot favourites this game. I really think Rovers will give these a good game.
I can see the argument for
because
that.
They're just not doing... And like, Rosenberg, I think, are struggling this year, but Bran are struggling as well. Yeah. I'm not sure they're... Like, when
they don't have a mad European pedigree. They haven't played a huge amount of games. This
and
level,
Rovers are a very strong Europa League side for us. Do you know what I mean?
But at the same time, you still have to be... Not to be negative, because like, I think you have to be very confident about the quality of players Rovers have. But
they have to score.
Bran are still going to be playing a higher standard of game on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So, like, it's hard to know. I mean, we with the games this week. I mean, we've got St. Pat's against IFK Norrköping, which is at home on Thursday, and it's also live on air.
Somehow, air are fitting the two games.
It's hard back to back.
6 o'clock and 7:45.
It's hard to be confident about Pat's on their form. But actually, I mean, we've done well against Swedish teams.
Very well. And again,
and Pats have good midfield players who can retain the ball as well. Like, and
we've got to speak about one of them, Conor Clifford.
Goal
on Friday night. You'd have been proud of that now. The lad could have eaten the rest of his chips because it went into the top corner. What an absolute screamer.
You'd do well to find someone with chips behind the goals of the RSC. I think there's actually a McDonald's around 4 kilometres up the road.
In fairness to Pats, despite all of this, Pats have now gone into the top four again by virtue of Derry having a couple of games.
Their goal difference is -1. I think it's for a team that's four to like...
Dan, where are they going to get goals
from? They've actually been low scoring games all year.
Fourth best defence and fourth worst attack. But between Mikey Drennan and Gary Shaw, when he's been playing, I'd say they've about 5 goals between them. I'm speculating there, but
Richmond on European nights can be actually a great venue. Mm. Like, Pat's Elfsborg actually back was one of my favourite League of Ireland games in Europe, and I know that the standing room is closed, but it can really get tight. It can be a tight venue, Mark. You know what it can be like. Probably more so. I know you had a brief spell there, but it's more on the opposing side.
Oh yeah, it's one of the best to play in, especially when it's packed. Because it is right on top of you. You know, when you go to, say, Waterford and it seems like the stand is a mile away from you, it can more or less bring down the atmosphere. But Richmond on a packed night is as good as any of them.
Have you seen much of them this year in the league, Pats? Yeah.
No, not very. I played with Chris Forrester, so I know what he's about. And I've seen Conor Clifford play. You know, he's huge pedigree as a footballer.
Chris was on the bench against Waterford. I suspect he may not start
this
game, but they have plenty of midfielders.
It's funny though, you'd have no fear about whatever, but maybe he just hasn't been in the best place and it hasn't been a great year for him, but you'd have no fear about throwing him into the game, you know, to that type of fixture. It could actually
shoot him down to the
ground. It could sort of enliven him.
That'd be
great. It would be fantastic if it did. I mean, Pats have a really good record an European match at Richmond Park. Mm. Like, and I think sometimes it is the venue behind the row of houses just like throws people. I remember that crowd, Krylia Sovetov, back in the day. I remember they'd come in, we saw them before the game, and that someone had obviously gone down to the Guinness factory and bought a load of cans of Guinness. And we saw them bringing in the, these cans of Guinness before the game. You're thinking, I'm not sure if they're fully focused on the match here. They beat them 1-0 at home, and then it was actually 3-2 away. Yeah. Was that Fabio, the game where Fabio got the two goals late and they went through? Because it was Samara. And so I was in Samara.
They were actually bringing booze onto their...
Well, they were. I don't think they were going to have it before the match. Yeah, it was obviously for afterwards. But I think Pat's, it could be one of these nights, the home match, where they get something going. Doing the job over two legs, it's probably hard to be.
They've got to get a result on Thursday.
And then Cork, we had Declan Carey on, but I mean, Cork progress, neither Cork. I mean,
it just has to be pointed out the progress, pardon the pun, that Luxembourg teams have made. I saw Cork were odds on favourites for this game. That they will not go off odds on
favourites. Well, progress, like the Luxembourg team's done really well in recent years. Mm. Even, I'm thinking, you mentioned Jonas Esch there.
But even since then,
Dudel Lange meant the groups last year. And their progress did also get by Cardiff Met, from who were like a part-time team in Wales in pre-season.
On away goals.
So like, let's not, you know, build them up into being superstars.
I think Cork came out of the game on Friday. I think their tails were up a bit. They came off the pitch like buzzing that there was good square, two clean sheets in a row, which shouldn't be underestimated. I don't think they're in a terribly bad way in terms of their mentality, but goals.
If they have their midfield, particularly if they have Morrissey and Buckley, if their midfielders, Conor McCormick, if their midfielders are all available and at it, they are capable of beating this crowd over two legs.
Definitely,
if they're at their best. But it's you just can't be confident about it. But at the same time, the players know there's Rangers on the other side to get through. Like, that is you can imagine Mark being in that dressing room, that group. You've had a bad season. You're seventh in the league. Every league match must be a bit of a... But this maybe a fresh challenge and a fresh focus might just be the thing.
That's it, yeah. Like, you know, we've spoke about it before already, gone the amount of players there that have won leagues and won, you know, won cups in recent years. And they've just, I'm not saying that they've down tools, but it's like from the outside looking in, you're there going, it's a travesty what's happened to them. You would have expected them to be pushing Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, and they're pushing Finn Harps, unfortunately. So... You know, I hope they can get it together, because for these regionalised teams, I think they need to have, you know, a good Sligo team, good Cork teams that are footballing towns that will come in their thousands to support a team that, I'm not saying they're going to be successful, but they're going to give their all and challenge these teams, and for whatever reason, they're just not. Mm.
They all have a chance, and likely one or two of them will get through.
Yeah, I'd be delighted with one or two. I mean, that's not being negative. I think,
well, one would be a bit disappointing.
Just one would be disappointing, but it's a realistic scenario to a degree. Like,
oh, absolutely.
When you look at it, that there's two are seeded and two are unseeded. So
I'd be wary of Riga now. I think. Just like, Dundalk. I'm not sure they've really hit form yet. As that might sound daft,
but I think they've got another gear in them. Yeah, I think that's the
they'll have prepared.
Being away second isn't actually a problem. No,
okay.
No, I don't think it's a problem for them at all. I mean, you think of Iceland that time, you know, Legia Warsaw. But I actually don't think being away second is necessarily. Right. A wrench because they're a team that has an away goal in them. It's just if they're disciplined. And it's interesting, we had Edmonds on earlier to discuss the style of the Riga team. And if they come and they are defensive, I don't, you know.
It'll suit them. They need to score.
If I'm Riga, I'm thinking
they have to score
to go through, because if they don't score in Ireland, I think Dundalk will win the tie.
I'd be wary of Cork. I don't think anyone could tell you that Cork obviously aren't playing that well. For some reason, I think Pats will give this a good go, and I really fancy Rovers to be banged there. What do you think, Mark? How many of them will get through?
After speaking to the reporter there from Latvia, I think Dundalk will win, especially if they set up shop like
that. He didn't. That wasn't his intention, though. Yeah.
No, but I'd be looking at it. The way that they play, you know, they move the ball so quickly. They're used to that pitch. I'm not saying, you know, I don't know what kind of pitch they play over in Riga, but it suits them. Because they play on it all the time.
Yeah.
From listening to that, I'd expect Dundalk to win. Both legs.
Yeah, hopefully, best of luck to all the clubs. Just to run through the results from the weekend, remarkable stuff up at Brandywell, Derry City 2, Dundalk 2. But Shamrock Rovers, despite having 380% possession, couldn't do the job against Sligo Rovers. A couple of mates at the game, they couldn't believe that Sligo actually had 30% possession in the game, in the stats afterwards.
I'd say that was the keeper, yeah, holding onto the ball, to be honest.
I think... My mate said he'd never seen a team dominate as much in the second half without scoring. UCD won, Finn Harps nil. What a massive result there. Watford won, St. Pat's 2, and Cork nil, Bowes nil. Premier Division fixture.
On Friday, we've got Derry City UCD. That's the only game this Friday. And then on Saturday, we've got Sligo Rovers Waterford, which is live on air, I believe, as well. So
Is Coleman still in charge of them?
He is, John Coleman, yeah.
Seamus Keneally.
Seamus Keneally. I got an award with him one night. It was one of the most stupid nights of my life, basically, because I went to a tech school, the VEC, they give out these awards. Seamus Keneally got an award for, like, you know, becoming a proper professional footballer. He was playing in England at the time. I got an award for basically becoming a journalist. That was it. Like, I'd achieved nothing, but they were so light on people to give.
Was he in the same school as you?
No, he just went to a Galway VEC, like, so a tech school in Galway. So there were these awards given out for lads who actually did achieve something, and I got it just because I actually completed my college course and became a journalist. Like, so.
Are you the first one ever out of Galway? Or?
Possibly. Yeah, possibly. But I remember asking Seamus Keneally at the time what he made of Sean Connor, because he brought him to Galway United, and we had a good chat. He had a great career. Seamus had a great career.
And Sean Connor, Mark Ross. You said Sean Connor there, and Mark Rosser just sat back in his chair.
Well, he brought me to Bowles.
Yeah, so, I was just going
to
say.
He had a remarkable ability to sign good players. I have to give it to him.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah, no, even at Galway United, the players he brought in.
We can't move on to Sean Connor this long into the podcast. We're just going to have to return. We have to get Mark back again.
Might get him on next week, Sean Connor. At Lone Tree.
He needs his own show.
Speaking of Sean Connor, by the way, obviously the club most relevant to him now, Limerick. 3-1 at home to Longford. Limerick season gets more insane, really, by the week. And Longford down to third as well. They're actually 7 points off shelves now. And Breydan down to sixth, 15 points off the top, having lost to Cabin Teely. That's a result that Gary Cronin will be worried, because they're now 7 points off fourth. I got to give it to Drogheda as well. Tim Clancy, you would know, obviously, Mark, the budget they have, they shouldn't be second.
Tim is a class man. So the players will play for him. Mm. And he doesn't... He doesn't put up with trivial shite, let's say.
They've had major injuries this season. Well, Adam Wicks did one of their major signings, barely played, if he's played at all. At Lone 3, Wexford 1, Cabin Teely 2, Drogheda 4, Cove 2, Galway United 0, Shelburne 3, Shelburne consolidating. Just got to mention Galway United striker, who's been one of the shining lights this season, Shane Doherty, just left the club today because his dad is very unwell in the US. He's been really, really good for Galway United. Just want to wish him the best and going back to spend time with his family. And anyway, that all means Shelburne are 7 points clear, Dan, it looks like.
Yeah.
That the two predictable, maybe.
Yeah. We'll see. This Friday, they've got Cabin Teely at home. I think they lost that fixture the first time in Talcott. Mm. Bray Limerick on Friday, Wexford Galway on Friday, then Saturday, Cove Ramblers at Lone, Longford Town Drogheda. Of course, big in the game. Cup, Shell's got Bowes in the Cup, which is the highlight of the FEI Cup draw.
Yeah. Going to be sharing grounds in the near future?
Well, this is it, yeah. Whether they want to or not from the perspective of Shell's, but yeah, a Bowes Shell's match in Dalymount is like a window to the future.
Mm. Be interesting. Because in fairness, Shells will go into that game thinking that they can win. They've got the squad to obviously play in the Premier League.
And serious insider knowledge as well from between Ian Morris and all the lads who they've signed. From Bowes.
One point on Bowes. Is there a Bowes team that plays Rovers and a Bowes team that plays every other week? Because I've seen a lot of them this season and I can't really recognise the two teams. The one on Friday night, like, they're just a strange team. They were so poor on Friday night, Bowes, I thought. Like, they offered very little. And then they play Rovers and they just keep beating.
Yeah, but you see, like, their plan when they've played Rovers has been brilliant. You know, they've set up against, I think, well against Rovers to exploit their mistakes and to, you know, they're very clever in terms of how they approach the games. Maybe we're expecting more of them now, and we're expecting them to.
Mandrew was poor on Friday control. Night, for example.
But they were still missing 8 players on the Monday. And I just think that the congestion of fixtures is hurting them more than most. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's affected the level of their performance, but I think that they'll whether they want it or not, there's a small chance to recharge the batteries now with Europe and stuff. And I think I've still seen Bowes play once or twice at home this year where they've been decent. Mm.
It's a great time of year though with the European games coming up, just and to have three games televised. I remember when there were practically no games on TV. You can see three of the teams in Europe, and you just can't see Cork because they're on the same time or whatever. But looking forward to it, Mark.
Yeah, it'd be deadly. I hope they all go through. I really do. The fact that they're showing all the games as well this week is you're just hoping that they put on a good spectacle so that all the bar stoolers, as we call them, will actually take note and go, well, actually, it is a decent standard.
Did you ever see any teams going through the airport, actually? I'm trying to think. Have you ever bumped into any ex-teammates?
What was that? Do you know the one I seen when Bray, was it Bray? Harry Kenny was at. They went over and they were playing over in Scotland.
Oh, they were at the Iron Brew Cup.
Yeah, he turned around and I was chatting to him and Liam O'Brien, and he was there going, he said, "Are you still playing?" And I just went, "No." He said, "Do you wanna?" And I just went, "No." So that was it. Yeah,
that's when you knew Bray were going to lose that tie.
Yeah, it's normally on the Saturday morning after the Friday night when they do the break. You do see it's literally like a League of Ireland terminal. They're all flying out
taking somewhere. Whiskey as opposed to gin. I hope.
I'd say they're probably sitting in the Slaney bar, probably drinking pints at 6:30 in the morning. But
fair play as well. Laois hurlers, they went on the tear after beating Westmead for a couple of days, played Dublin on the Sunday and somehow beat them and went on the tear again afterwards. Like, this whole nonsense of not having a pint after the game.
Absolutely.
Will you come back into the game? What's your...
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I don't know. I'll
bit of a straight shooter now. You got good qualities for a coach there, taking no nonsense.
Oh yeah, I don't have patience at the best of times. So I'll wait and see. To be honest, you know, when I was doing it for Northwest Radio, going and commentating on the games, I like that side of it. It's nice to go and watch a game and be neutral. Just have an interest in it.
What's the your tip on a dark horse in terms of whiskey to drink? If you're the whiskey connoisseur,
Powers John's Lane.
Powers John's Lane.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we are. Do you like the old whiskey, Dan?
I'd be partial. My brother would, but my brother would know his stuff. I'd be bluffing if I tried to get into a debate, but I'll take that recommendation on board.
Mm. Bluffing if trying to get into debates rather defines our careers, maybe.
That's taking us this far, John.
Thanks very much for listening to episode 22, season 3. Thanks a million for coming in, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Top man. And very best of luck to the four clubs over the next week. But there are